Well, welcome everyone to Sparkle On with Davey Jags. Sparkle is your happiness, passion, and self-worth. And this is where passion meets purpose and purpose equals change. Today, I'm so excited to have Imani McGee Stafford, who holds many amazing titles, one of which she was a former WNBA player. She is a poet and she's a soon-to-be attorney. So she's just killing it. I met Imani at the Hollywood and Mind Conference, and I was just so inspired by her advocacy work and her leadership on and off the court. So I'm really excited about this episode. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah, so you are from LA, but we're recording today from Austin, Texas. And I was just telling Imani, I cannot handle this heat.
This is definitely my second home. I went to UT. My roommate also went to UT with me. She was my college point guard. So I do not like it in the summer, but it's a nice little pit stop for Texas.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, I love the food scene out here. I mean, anywhere I go and travel, I'm always trying to find the food scene, but I like this one for sure. But one of the things I noticed, you call yourself a self-proclaimed unicorn. Can you go into what that means? Because I love it, especially with Sparkle and how I am.
So when you told me, like, wear something sparkly, I was like, oh my gosh, this is my moment. I've never worn these pants before.
They're so great.
They're super sparkly. They're super pink. And yes. I'm like, yes, finally. And so, like, I don't know. I became obsessed with unicorns at some point. I don't even know when it happened for real. I have a unicorn tattoo. Ooh. Like, all of my friends are like, they know I love unicorn. So, like, if they see something, they'll grab it and just randomly give it. So I have, like, a ridiculous collection of unicorn themed things. I think for me, like, I think I've always kind of been, like, just different. Obviously, being 6'7", I was 6'5 or 13. But I've always just kind of been, like, my mom likes to say I'm a contrarian. And I just always kind of think, like, I'm not the only person in the world like me, but I am, like, a rare breed. And so, like, when I say, like, I'm a unicorn, like, this is an experience. Like, I'm different. And I love that about myself. And I think that, you know, like, you should embrace the things that make you you.
Yeah, no, I love that you. When did you develop this, like, you coined this term for yourself?
It had to be early 20s, maybe.
Wow.
Because people have been asking me this recently for some reason, and I'm just like, I have no clue. It's just been a thing. And, like, now I just have so many unicorn things. Like, everyone knows I love unicorns. Like, it's actually my favorite thing because I'm not a big gift person, but I love, like, sentimental things.
Right.
So people will be like, oh, I found this notebook. It had unicorns all over it. Or, like, look at this little unicorn keychain, and, like, they bring it to me and stuff. And, like, anytime I see something unicorn, I buy it. So I don't know. It's, like, my little thing.
I knew because I go seeking guests that can identify with the mission of Sparkle. And the fact that you can recognize that you are this rare breed is, like, the mission that I'm trying to share here. So you make for the perfect guest to be on the show. So you come from a family full of amazing athletes. But I'm curious to know how you developed your own identity and love for the sport of basketball.
Yeah. So I've always been, like, the nerdy kid. My mom was always just like, this is my nerd, this is my athlete. And my dad was very scared that I would get, like, burnt out on basketball.
Oh, okay.
So he made me, like, beg to play basketball. Like, I started playing really late. I didn't really start until, like, freshman year of high school.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to start middle school, and my first game, I broke my ankle.
Oh, no.
Yeah, literally. But I always, like, was always in a gym. My older brother, who plays in the NBA, he's 7 years older than me. So, like, I grew up watching him play. Like, right. I don't really remember my mom playing because I was so young. But, like, there's pictures of me, like, in a stroller at a gym.
Oh, wow.
And my dad also played. His sister was a college coach. Mm-hmm. So I was always in a gym growing up, even before I started playing. And then, like, I don't know, like, for me early on, basketball was confidence. Like, I was an awkward kid. Like, I had really big Coke bottle glasses. I was, like, long and lanky. Like, basketball was the first place where, like, I felt good about my body.
Oh, okay.
Like, because when I got on the court, everyone was like, I want to talk it. Like,
yeah,
you know what I mean?
Exactly.
And, like, it also was the first place I could see, like, I work on something and I see it happening. Right. Like, you can study and you'll get a good grade, but it just, basketball was kind of, like, quick, right? Like, I can practice dribbling for a week and, like, next week I see the, like, demonstrative difference of me, like, working and trying it. So early on, it really was just, like, confidence. And then, like, I had a very tumultuous childhood. Like, I grew up in an abusive household. I was sexually abused. Like, my dad was getting divorces. It was just a lot going on. And basketball was safety.
Yeah,
it became, like, my safe place to go. Like, I was home alone since, like, 8, but if I was going to do sports, I can get out the house,
right?
So I would go play sports. And then like when I really started going through it in high school, like I would be in my college, my high school coach or my trainer all day, every day. Like, what are we doing? We're going to work out. We're going to get food. Like, mm-hmm. they really just kind of took me in. So a lot of it just became like this place where not only did I feel safe, but like I like appreciated the things that I felt were uncomfortable or like that I didn't necessarily like about myself at the time.
Yeah. Did you always know you wanted to go professional?
No.
when did that kind of moment
start? My family laughs at me now.
Really?
I always said I was never going to play pro.
Oh, wow. That's so funny.
Yeah.
What was the reason that you said, no, I'm not going to play pro?
One, I didn't think I was good enough. Like, okay. I didn't have the confidence back then. And then two, like, you know, like, I wanted to go get an education and go about my business. Like, mm-hmm. that was it. Like, I wasn't a ball is life kid. Like,
yeah.
I did so many other things. Like, I did theater when I was younger. I used to sing. I started writing poetry in middle school. So, like, basketball was just, like, something I was good at. And it was the easiest way for me to get a free education. But it wasn't like, oh, I want to be a pro. Like, I never had that mindset. And then my junior year of college, I had an injury. Mm-hmm. And I came back way too soon. And I ended up, like, I wouldn't practice and I would just play. Mm-hmm. And, like, I finished that season, like, all Big 12. Like, I was getting all these awards. And I was, like, on one leg. Like, what the heck?
Like, that's kind of awesome.
And I was like, oh, I think I'm good enough to do this for real. Oh, like, wow. And it kind of just changed my mindset. And I also had to get an internship for my degree. My undergraduate is accounting. And I was going to work 30-minute lunch breaks, and I was like, okay, all right, let's think about this basketball stuff.
That makes sense. Yeah. Like, you're not used to this corporate environment, and you can be playful on the court. But what I do find interesting is actually you're a writer longer than you were a basketball player.
Yeah.
And as a writer myself, I find that super fascinating. So when did you start writing poetry? What was that kind of moment, and how did you gravitate towards that?
So I'm a preacher's kid. So I grew up in church. Like, I used to sing. I wanted to be Alicia Keys when I was growing up.
I love that for you.
That was like my favorite singer. So I used to write music.
Oh,
and
wow.
Then in seventh grade, shout out my English teacher, Miss Williams. We studied The Diary of Anne Frank, mm-hmm. and we read Night, and we studied Tupac's poetry.
Awesome.
And so like the idea that a 12-year-old girl could have any type of voice that someone wanted to read and care about, like, almost a century after she was gone,
yeah,
was crazy to me. Mm-hmm. And then, like, I didn't even know what poetry was. And then, like, we studied Tupac's poetry, not even his music, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I just, like, fell in love with it.
Yeah.
I was like, wow. And then I started figuring out, like, when I wrote a poem, like, my family, like, I didn't come from the family where you sat down and was like, how was your day?
Right.
But if I was like, hey, I wrote this, they'd be like, oh, like, read it to us. And I was like, oh my God. Like, so I just started writing, and then like they would always want to listen. And I like kind of had that audience in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And then people started like being like, oh, I read this and I understand you. Like, I feel that way too.
Yeah.
So it kind of became like a community for me. Mm-hmm. And then I started, like, I grew up in LA. I don't know if you're familiar with, what is it called? Tuesday nights. It's basically where Deaf Poetry Jam started.
Okay.
And it's Tuesday nights at Fairfax, and I can't.
Oh, I know.
The Poetry Lounge, DPL.
Yes, I know what you're talking about. Okay. Yes, I've been. I went there to meet my friend, and then they don't let you in after a certain time.
Yeah, you got to be on time and early, really, because it's like a line.
Yes, I was finishing a shift at the gym, you know, doing my LA thing, and they didn't let me in.
Yeah. So we're gonna go next time you're in LA.
Please.
It is like
that.
I started going to high school as a kid, and like it's late too. It's a Tuesday night.
Uh-huh.
You got to line up at 8. It opens at 9, and it's normally over on like maybe 11:30.
Okay.
And like I was not allowed to be out that late on school nights. So I had to like sneak out to go.
You snuck out to go to the poetry?
Yeah, I used to sneak out and go, and like I'd be like, I'm going to hang out with my friend, and then like we would go, and like their parents, my dad was really strict. Their parents were always cool. So
but you were going to a poetry show. It wasn't like you were going to a party.
This is how nerdy I am too, because truly this is what I was sneaking out to do.
That's so funny.
And like I finally was in a room where people were sharing their poems, and like I was feeling like seen and heard. And like I always say, like, basketball was like my saving grace, but poetry was air.
That's beautiful.
It was like community. It was the first time I was in a room with people that like didn't necessarily look like me or come from where I came from, but I right. felt heard and seen, and we were really like just connecting about like human experience.
Mm-hmm.
And like that's what I love about art in general.
Mm-hmm.
And so like that was just like that's what started it, really.
Do you think when you started to play basketball that it inspired any of your poetry, or has it always been like your art has inspired your performance?
I think it's like two different worlds, honestly.
Really?
Yeah. Like, I'm like this little artsy kind of introvert.
Uh-huh.
And like, that's what I get from poetry. It's mm-hmm. like I get to kind of like be seen in a different way. Because like, I'm 6'7", so like, I'm never really not allowed to talk because someone's always going to come ask me like, oh, do you play basketball? How tall are you? Oh my gosh. And like, that's like my basketball persona. Like, okay, yeah, I play basketball. And I'm like really aggressive and like rah-rah and serious. And like, that's what I get from basketball. Like, it's an outlet. Mm-hmm. It's also a way of life, which is cool. But poetry is like, I get to kind of be like my real self that doesn't necessarily get to come out a lot.
That's amazing. And I love how you gave a shout out to your English teacher, because it really is like, that's how much we should appreciate teachers from a young age, because it really does form those like adult years. So when was the moment that you actually decided you wanted to go to law school?
Whew. So it's so funny because I want to go to Princeton coming out of high school.
Okay.
But Princeton doesn't give athletic scholarships.
Right.
They only do like financial aid. Mm-hmm. So I would have to pay $5,000 a year, which was going to come out of my brother's pocket because none of us had it. Mm-hmm. And my brother looked at me and was like, are you going to be a 7-foot lawyer? And I was like, no. I was like, I want to be an accountant. And he was like, pick any other school. He was like, they'll give it to you for free.
Yeah.
And so I ended up going to Texas, which has like the number one accounting program, blah, blah, blah. Uh-huh. And fast forward 10 years and I just finished law school.
Yeah.
Like, it's funny how life works. So basically, like during the pandemic, right before the pandemic, actually, I kind of started looking into different, I wanted to get another degree.
Okay.
I was thinking about like a Master of Fine Arts in Poetry, something around like, you know, like women's rights or like race and gender studies, like something in there.
Yeah.
And I was just, it was something I was like really interested in. And then like when I was playing for Dallas, somebody that worked in the main, like in our front office, she did like community relations. So we always did a lot of stuff and like events together. And I had kind of mentioned to her like, I'm trying to figure out what I want to do. I think I want to go back to school, like maybe law. But like, I wasn't even thinking like, it was no intent behind it. Literally was just like spitballing. And she was like, oh, I just took the LSAT. Take all my books.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, she was like, no, just take them. If you don't want to use them, like whatever, like I'm done. She was like, but just look and see, maybe you really want to do it. Like here, you can do it, like whatever. And like, it's so funny how little things like can catapult you into a whole new like life, right? Because had she been like, oh, like, that's crazy, like you play basketball, like you're fine, right? Or just any type of different, like not supportive, I may not have even like ventured down that road.
Right.
And so I started looking into like law programs. Mm-hmm. And in the same time, this is like 2020, like pandemic is happening, right? This is like right when Trump is in the office and we're talking about Brett Kavanaugh. And I'm just like, okay, like I want to do something substantive. Like I feel like speaking about like being bipolar, being a survivor of childhood sexual abuse, like that's great, right? Like it's about like sharing hope and telling people like, I see you, I've been where you are.
Right.
But I'm like, I want to do something that like actually does change something.
Yep.
And I'm not going to be a politician. Like that's just not happening. And I'm not going to be a cop.
Anything's possible.
This is true. My mother is holding out that I'll be a senator one day. And I'm like, God bless. I didn't want to be a cop or anything.
Right.
And so like law seemed like the most realistic thing. Mm-hmm. I really like to read books. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, okay, cool. This should probably be easy.
Yeah.
And so I just kind of took her LSAT stuff and I was just like messing around. Like, okay, I'm gonna take the test. Like, okay, let's study and do it. So I went to Australia to play basketball. I'm studying for the LSAT while I'm there. I take the LSAT while I'm out there. I'm late to something. Me and the coach already didn't get along. He cut me.
Oh, geez.
I get cut taking the LSAT. Hilarious. So I come home. I go to a law school fair at USC. One of the schools, the school I ended up going to, their admissions person was on the panel. Mm-hmm. I end up talking to her afterwards. She's telling me about their school. And I'm like, oh, cool. Like, I didn't even think about this. Like, you know, so I'm like, you know what? I'll just apply. Like, whatever.
Yeah.
It's like 150. Like, it's nothing crazy. Like, I'll apply. I'm not going to get in. Like, I'm like literally only going to apply to this school. I get in.
That's awesome.
I get a scholarship. I did not last. God bless. Law school is hard. But I had it once upon a time. and I'm like, wow, like, I think I'm going to take a break from basketball and go to law school. Wow. And I call up my friend who gave me the books, right? Mm-hmm. She's now about to start at Howard Law. And she's like, that's so amazing. Like, we can do it together. I call my agent at the time. I'm thinking he's going to like cuss me out. Like, what are you thinking? Like,
right.
You're in the prime of your career. Why would you not? I just signed another year deal with Dallas. Uh-huh. And I'm like, I think I'm gonna go to law school. And he's like, is that what we're doing? That's what you want to do? All right, we're doing it. Like,
that's awesome.
And that's kind of how it went. And I'm like, I'm so blessed to have people around me that like see me for more than who I am in that current moment.
Yeah.
Because I'm definitely a dreamer. And like, I feel like I reinvent myself every 3 years. And I'm lucky that I have people that love me enough to like be like, yeah, let's figure it out.
Well, I don't know if it's so much about reinventing yourself as much as it is just embracing all the things that make you you. And that's essentially like what I define your sparkle to be. Because we do wear different characters, and that's the beauty of it. It's sometimes it's messy. Sometimes it is that light, and you light up a room. But what I love about your story and where I really resonate with it is kind of these agents, your literal agent, but these agents along the way that did see the holistic side of you and the future of like any career that you want. You talked a lot about how your coach at Texas was someone when I met you at the Hollywood and Mind Conference, that's someone that saw you. It was the first time that you could prioritize self-care. They actually let you miss a basketball game for a poetry contest. So can you speak to the power of that kind of like compassionate coaching?
Oh my gosh. And I talk to kids all the time, especially because now we're in the age of NIL and like social media. And I'm like, it's so easy to be like, I don't want to say pigeonholed, because there's nothing wrong with being just an athlete. Like, right. That's amazing.
Yeah.
But a lot of times we have so many other things we can be interested in or believe in, mm-hmm. and we just don't have the time to explore those things. Mm-hmm. So I'm so blessed that like I had my coach who was like, hey, I know this is what you like. Like, as long as you can do everything, do everything. Mm-hmm. Because I think a lot of people aren't given that kind of freedom, especially in college, because college D1 athletics is crazy.
Yeah.
And so, like, to this day, like, she always checks in on me. We talk every now and again. Huh. And so I'm just very appreciative, because, like, that trip in itself kind of changed my life and catapulted me into being a mental health advocate and talking about, like, the things I've gone through openly.
Yeah. And I think so I also turned to writing when I was a student athlete at Xavier, and I turned to writing it. You were a writer before you came out with your story, but I turned to it when I lost autonomy in my body and I couldn't make sense of this athlete bubble that I was in. And I know what it's like to use writing to understand our grief. And when you went and performed, you were kind of open about that grief. Can you talk about what it was like? Because I know it was on a very big platform, and I know that couldn't have been easy, whether you were ready for it or not. And I'm curious to know the support of the coach, but then also how you dealt with it personally.
Yeah, so it was an accident. like, it was supposed to be on Longhorn Network, mm-hmm. which, like, no one gets. Like, I don't even know if we still exist for real. But, like, Texas was the first college to have their own network. And, like, mm-hmm. pretty much everybody in Texas and, like, the 5 states around it got Longhorn Network. And it was all Texas all the time. But, like, no one watches it. So I was like, okay, cool. Like, no one's going to watch this. Like, whatever. And because ESPN owns Longhorn Network, mm-hmm. they were like, this needs to be bigger. And they made it a SportsCenter feature story.
Did you know about it?
They asked, but I was 19. I'm literally like, who cares? Like, sure, whatever. Like, mm-hmm. and I didn't think I understood the gravity of what was happening at all. Like, at all. And I remember, like, they're like, nah, now we're going to go home. We're going to interview your parents and your family and your friends and, like, your coaches. And we're going to make this a thing. And, like, I remember at the time I was engaged to my ex-husband. Shout out my ex-husband. and I remember asking him, like, hey, like, everybody's going to know. Like, and he was just like, it's your choice. Like, mm-hmm. like, I'll support you. And then, like, I think the craziest part was I was so ashamed and scared, because mm-hmm. I was just like, you know, like, these are my deepest, darkest secrets. Like, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Like, everyone's going to look at me weird, or like that girl that was abused, or, you know, like, just see me differently.
Yeah.
And I, like, met all these people that some of them I know my entire life and didn't know they had the same story as me. Mm-hmm. And it was other people that, like, found me and went out of their way to be like, hey, I've never been to share my story, but it's your story. And thank you so much. Mm-hmm. Right. And it was so many people I met that had similar stories to people that they loved or themselves. And I was just like, this is why I'm here. Like, wow. Mm-hmm. Like, this is why I'm 6'7". This is why I play basketball. This is why I write poetry. Like, this is my purpose. Like, mm-hmm. and it's a great feeling.
I know. I mean, Sparkle actually started out as a sexual violence movement. Like, as I was coming out of, you know, just understanding what was happening to me. And it started to be the gravity of knowing that it was relieving to know that I wasn't the only one on my campus, but then it was hard to know and also hard to represent the school as an athlete when I heard some of the stories. And I'm kind of curious because I think in a way I knew that I was always an advocate. Whether, I mean, I became a vegetarian at 11 years old and I made my parents eat with like the lights off for like a week. So like, I think I always was a little bit like this before I experienced these traumatic things. But yes, you were a writer from a young age, but I can tell by your presence and the way that you advocated about your mental health story and for others that you've probably have always been this way. But I'm kind of curious if you knew you were always an advocate.
So I've always been like a don't pick on anyone type kid.
I love that.
Like I was always like, you know, like I was always just like, we're not going to do bullying. Like I don't care about stuff happening to me, but if it's someone else or someone I care about, like I'm like, no. And like I was always a kid that like wanted to help. Like my dad says, like you were just so compassionate. Like you always wanted to like, you need something. Like you've always been like that kind of kid. So I think like it was a natural progression that maybe I didn't see happening. But like when people tell me about like who I was as a kid and like the things I really enjoy doing, like it kind of makes sense.
How do you use writing to kind of reclaim the story and the craft of the story that you want to tell, especially because I believe it's so important as a woman of color to own our stories?
Yes, yes. I think so. It was very scary because my story kind of became bigger than me, right? Like, especially like who I was at the time. Like I was this top D1 athlete, like about to get drafted into the WNBA. Like I had all these things. And at a certain point, I had to realize like how it was being told I didn't necessarily like. Because I think a lot of times, specifically when we talk about violence and specifically sexual violence, we talk about like the trauma.
Yep.
And like this exciting, oh my God, this happened to you. But we don't talk about like tomorrow. We don't talk about like what happens after. We don't talk about the full person because like just because this one thing happened doesn't mean that they're this person forever. Or like that this is something that we have to mention every time we talk about them.
Yeah.
Right. And so like seeing myself as more than my, as more than like my trauma as well was something I had to do. Like, oh, you deserve more than just this moment.
Right.
Right. Like you are so much bigger than this moment. And that also was a, like also a journey with my own mental health. Right. Like I never thought I lived past 18. So everything after 18 was like, this is new life to me. I don't even know what's going on.
Yeah.
And so like getting to the point where I'm like, I don't have to survive. Like I want to live. Like I want to do all these things. I want to experience this happiness and this joy and this calm.
Yeah.
Right. Like I think I deserve those things as well. I think that was a lot of work that I had to do. And then now when I share my story, I make sure that people understand that like this is something that happened.
Yeah.
It is not the whole of me. It's not even a chapter. It's something that happened. And I think once we understand that, like, that we have to not only continue to care about the person after their traumatic event, but we also understand that they're a whole person too. Like,
yeah.
This isn't something that we have to like fixate on.
I think that's what's so hard about trying to navigate like the representation of these stories, because we need to see it in the media, like whether it's like in scripted TV shows, but I feel like depending on who's writing it, it becomes the climax of a story. And I've gotten in arguments in my MFA program about this, where that instance was the climax of the story. And taking a calm moment, I understand where that like stereotype comes from, but it is because that what you're saying is not shared enough, is that it is something that happened, but it's not, it doesn't define you. And when I think about Sparkle, I think about the light and darkness existing in the same sky. And I don't think that you have to go through darkness to experience light, but we do. And what does it mean to you, or how did you, when you were in these dark moments, understand that your light wasn't out, it was just dimmed?
Whew, that's a tough one. So I used to say this, so morbid, when I was a kid. When I was like maybe in high school, I used to say like, the light at the end of my tunnel has a sign that says like, out for maintenance. Like, I'm looking and I'm like, it's great. Like, and so I think I had to figure out one that I wanted to be here. I think especially like growing up in chaos, like that's your normalcy.
Right.
Like, you don't know what to do when things are calm. You don't even believe them. Like, you want to break something because you're like, this is normal to me. I understand this world. And so I had to, like, get to the point where I understood, like, that the things that I had kind of learned and inherited from my environment weren't necessarily the best for me. And, like, being able to know the difference between the two. And I think just embracing, like, the moment of where I am in my journey. Because I was very hard on myself. Like, and I didn't grow up in a, like, you know, like I said, I'm a preacher's kid. I didn't grow up in a super mental health friendly environment. Yeah. So I was very, very hard on myself. Couple of that with being an athlete, right? Like, you just are taught to, like, suck it up. Keep going, keep going, keep going.
Oh, that was me this entire run this morning. I was like... But then it's like the unlearning of, like, maybe I don't actually want to destroy my body. Maybe I just want to get through this race and not kill myself. But go
no,
ahead.
No, literally. Like, yeah. And so I guess, like, getting to the moment of being like, you're not okay.
Yeah.
Like, hey, 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 you're not okay. Let's sit there. Let's, like, figure out how do we move through this. Let's give ourselves permission to not be okay.
Yeah.
Because I think for me specifically, like, I found out I was bipolar, like, early in my 20s, maybe 23-ish in that area. But before that in college, I, like, cycled on and off antidepressants. And, like, I just knew depression. I didn't know any other thing.
Yeah.
And so, like, I would go 6 months and everything's great. And I'm moving and I'm, you know, like, I'm chugging along and I'm just do-do-do. And I crash. And I'd be like, bro, we did this. Like, we went through all of this. Like, we did the steps. We're doing it there. Like, what is wrong with you? Like, you know, like, I'd be so mad at myself.
Yeah.
And, like, obviously, once I understood, like, I'm bipolar, this is actually how it works, it was a lot easier to, like, give myself permission to feel my feelings and kind of navigate that. But early on, I was just so mad because I was just like, why are we still struggling? Like, you're doing the things, you're using the tools, like, you know what I mean? So I think that's the first thing, is just, like, allowing yourself to say things suck and figuring out how to move forward in that.
Do you feel like when you were talking about being in environments that aren't normal, you just are kind of conditioned to think they are because that's just what you're used to? I was also diagnosed as bipolar in college. And I think part of it was I now understand it to be that the environment itself wasn't, it was up and down.
Yeah.
It was, so that just exacerbated the feelings that I was already feeling.
Yeah.
And I don't think, you know, there's so many great things about routine and discipline in the athletic world, but there is a lot of up and downs. Do you feel like more balanced in certain environments than others?
Ooh, that's a good question. I do say that, like, being a pro athlete has definitely been an enabler for me to be bipolar and, like, unmedicated and kind of, like, you know, spazzing a little bit. I always say, like, me medicated is way less fun, more productive. Because I'm an artist. Like, I love the highs and the lows.
I get it. I truly get it. It's scary.
It's scary as shit.
Yeah.
But I love it.
Yeah. Like, love the thrill is what I said.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I do my best work. I tell everybody all the time, I'm like, I do my best work in heartbreak. Like, I'm like, I do my best work in the depths of sorrow, man. And then, like, when I'm manic and I'm like super hype and doing everything and getting stuff done, you know what I mean? But like, I kind of got to a point where I was like, I could probably be a lot further in my career if I just like actually took care of my mental health.
Yeah.
As opposed to just, and it was also like this kind of imposter syndrome too, because I'm out here saying like, hey, take care of your mental health. Like, mental health is important. And then like, I'm cycling on off meds. Like, I'm disappearing for weeks at a time.
But you, no one said you had to be an expert. I think that's the, a little bit that I love when people have platforms, but we also have to remember, like you said, you're a real person. You're an artist. You're an advocate. You're an artist. You're a basketball player. Like, there's experts, and then there's also people that are just really trying to help other people.
And I think, like, that was one of the things I had to come to terms with. Like, hey, like, it's okay. Like, I remember one time I called my cousin. She's like my heart, my sister cousin. We call each other sister cousins. Aww. We're like 3 years apart. We talk every day. And I'm literally having a breakdown. I'm on the phone, like, crying. And I'm like, all right, I have an interview for mental health in, like, 30 minutes. Okay, you gotta go. And she's like, hey, maybe we should reschedule it. She's like, it's okay. Like, she's like, maybe you want to take a break and just do some self-care.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay. Like, full meltdown mode. And, like, that's so, like, typical of, like, just that mindset of, right, like, I am this person, I am this brand, I need to, and it's like, but you also kind of have to, like, acknowledge that you're still a person going through these things, right?
So how are you setting boundaries, like, when that happens? I mean, I know you have good people in your life that obviously set it.
Yes, I love people that I need them because I'll just like chug through it. I mean, I think I've done a lot better with being like, I'm not in the mood or the spirit to like go champion things.
Right.
Or like, even when I'm doing speaking events, like I have to kind of be like, okay, what is the topic? Am I in the space to like go this deep?
Yeah.
Because I think like it's very easy to desensitize yourself because you tell the story so many times and like it doesn't really hurt that bad anymore, right? It's not a trigger anymore, but it's still something very real. Mm-hmm. And so like I think being aware of like, where am I? Do I want to do this? Am I comfortable doing this? Mm-hmm. Am I going to be cool like having the 30 conversations after? Like, is it not going to be draining to me? And just like just being very open and honest, I guess, with myself.
Sometimes I feel like it's not always a trigger, but then it starts, like, afterwards it feels like a hangover.
Yes. Yes.
And I'm like, all right, I know how to deal with both. Yeah. I'm like, do I really want a hangover today?
Yes. Like, yeah. I think that's it. Like, it's like the vulnerability, like, cloud afterwards of being very open and honest and like having these sub conversations, because sometimes you just want to chill. You don't want to be like, you don't want to be the advocate. You just want to be like, hey.
Yeah.
So I think just being honest about that and like having people around me as well that like can be like, yo, chill out, it's okay.
I see now more than ever, and I think the NIL helps with this because athletes are crafting their own voice and narrative. But I do see a lot more athletes gravitating towards storytelling and the arts. You've always been a storyteller in parallel with your basketball journey, but then I see a lot of them turn to it after retirement. Do you have any opinions of why this might be, or why storytelling is so cathartic for former athletes?
Well, I think first and foremost, like, our story is often written for us. Mm. Like, when you come into college, you get this huge, like, label of student athlete, right? Like, you come in, they tell you how to move, they tell you what's expected of you, and it's very much like you kind of fit the mold. Mm-hmm. So, like, telling your own story isn't always, like, something you know you need to do. Mm. It's also something that you, like, haven't really, like, traverse yet, because you have been doing this. Most of us, right? We started at 7, 8, 9. Mm-hmm. You've been doing it and chasing this dream for 10 years already. So I think a lot of us just don't even know like what that means. Like, what do you mean? Like, I'm a student athlete. And you kind of just ride that out until it stops. Mm-hmm. And then you kind of wake up like, okay, what am I now? Because I'm not an athlete. Like, now I have to go get a job or start my own business or whatever the case may be. But it's a whole different experience because I've never kind of explored that side of myself because I didn't have to. And then I think the other side of it is that, you know, like, people want consistency. They want what they want. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times sharing your story is not what they want.
Right.
And like, I say, like, it's a privilege to be able to share your story. Mm. Because a lot of people, like, I need this job. And especially in sports that are very strict, yep, right? Like, I can't do that. I'm going to lose opportunities. And I've sure lost opportunities for sharing my story. Like, I know that.
Oh, wow.
But it's kind of, for me, like, I'm like, it's a worthwhile risk for me. Mm-hmm. Because, like, this is my life purpose. Like, basketball is just a conduit for me to fulfill my life purpose. But that's my purpose. So I think it's both. A lot, mm-hmm, of people don't know. And then other people, like, it's the safety of, like, I can now tell my story and be my full authentic self because I don't have to fit into the mold of what I needed to do to get my job.
Right.
Or to perform at this level.
That's so interesting. I mean, yeah, I mean, it's definitely a privilege to tell your story in a lot of ways. And I guess you've always been certain that this is your purpose, but I do believe in living your most authentic self. And so what would be advice that you give to someone where they're kind of balancing, maybe trying to have to fit the mold a little bit to meet financial needs or something, but then also being free to express themselves?
I think it's a very realistic conversation, right? Like, mm-hmm, I think we're blessed to be in a space where now, right, there are so many different representations of what you can be and can, mm-hmm, look like. And I think, especially like when we think about our parents, like, right, they just didn't have that freedom.
Yeah.
So a lot of that is like what we're taught to know and ingrain in ourselves. But I think like you have to be realistic with yourself. Like, I would say, like, if we're looking at a vulnerability like spectrum, I'm probably like over 50%, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone can't be over 50%.
Yeah.
And my goal with sharing that my story isn't to make everybody be me. Mm-hmm. My goal is to get you to be comfortable being at 5% if you're normally a 1%er, right? Or mm-hmm. being at 10 instead of 5. And of course, like, I don't have to wear a suit every day. I don't have to go into work and answer to somebody. I'm blessed to be in that way. So I do understand, like, you know, like
right.
some of us do have to wear our gray suit and go to work and yeah. be this person and do these things. And we can't speak in certain ways. But my whole thing is just make sure you have a space where you can.
Mm. That's really good advice.
And that space may not be public, right? It might be with your family and friends. It might be with your partner. It could be wherever. But just make sure you have that space. Like, when I was in high school, the space was the poetry lounge, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, like, make sure you find that space that where people can see you as your authentic self, even if it's only once a week or once a month.
Mm-hmm. Where do you feel like your most, I mean, I know you said poetry, but, like, is that your most, like, safe and authentic space?
I think so.
Yeah. Yeah,
I think writing poetry and being able to be creative is probably my most authentic self.
Mm-hmm.
Basketball, like, just the game, not the things that come with it, but just the game.
Yeah.
I think that's, like, the fun and the joy.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
What would you say is, like, the most exciting thing that you're working on in your creative space right now?
My creative space?
Yes.
So I actually just did this thing with Champion.
Mm-hmm.
I was part of their first class of creators.
Oh, wow.
Very random. Literally saw it and I asked my friend to help me, like, put together a pitch. And
that's
we won.
That's so cool. Congratulations.
Yeah. So that's really cool. You either got $5,000 or $5,000 worth of merch. We took the merch. So I'm now developing, like, a line of sweatshirts. And I just actually picked up my first like completed batch today. So that's really fun.
Wait, that's amazing. Is your poetry on it or you can't tell me?
Oh, I can tell you. So it's not my poetry, but it is, like, basically we did 4 themed sweatshirts.
Okay.
The one I did today was safety. And it's basically about, like, in this sweatshirt, we hope you find a moment where you can feel safe, like where you can feel, it's hilarious that this is what we're talking about.
That is brilliant.
That's crazy.
I love it. That is
brilliant.
Wait,
that's insane that this is what we were talking about. And that, like that, oh my God.
Stars are aligning.
That is
sparkle
crazy.
On.
Yes. So yeah, like the first one, there is a heart on that is uh-huh. embroidered on the chest and you're like, it's like hugging itself. And then the arm has, like, different colored people, like, hugging each other. And it's supposed to feel like the moment of, like, nostalgia when you were a kid and you're, like, running into your sister's arms and you're just having fun. And hopefully.
I'm getting emotional.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
So that's, like, the first one. And okay. then, like, that's the one that's done. And then we're, like, doing 3 or 4 more. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's such a – I love how you – because I fell in love with storytelling through song lyrics, too. And then – I dabbled in poetry. I don't know if I'm good at it, but now I stick mostly to nonfiction. But I think what I love about lyrics and I love about poetry, it captures a specific moment, just like you said, like running into your sister's arms. And so it's like now you're expressing yourself as a poet in these other creative mediums.
Yeah, it's kind of really exciting.
And it's so empowering. And what I love supporting artists that can take themselves off the page and just push that boundary a little bit more. So it's like you came across this opportunity, but how do you want to keep kind of pushing that boundary?
Yeah, so I think it's really cool because, like, I think for me, I've just learned as an adult, like, things only work for me when I'm genuinely excited about it.
Mm.
Like, if I ever do anything because I'm like, oh, this will, like, give me a lot of money or, yeah. like, this is a great opportunity, they always suck. Like, I have to be genuinely excited about it.
And I resonate that with, like,
literally every time. And if I'm genuinely excited about it and passionate about it, like, God, the universe, like, whatever you believe in, like, it just aligns for me.
Mm.
And things just happen. And I'm like, everyone's like, well, how'd you do this? And I'm like, I just tried something. Like, I'm like, it was so cool. So, like, when the Champion creator, they threw an event at the Brooklyn Museum of Art, they put up our pieces and, like, we got to, like, really be artists and, like, say, like, we were on show at the Brooklyn Museum of Art, and, like, it was just an amazing event, and I got to meet the other people that were creatives. We got to go see, like, the Champion archive, like, stuff from the 50s and stuff like that, and, like, everyone was like, what happened? I'm like, bro, I just tried something. Like, yeah. I was like, I just enjoyed it. I just thought I would, I'm like, hey, let's try it, and then they were like, yeah, and I was
just like, having fun.
Oh, and, like, so, like, I think that's the exciting part for me. It's because, like, I'm trying new things that I, like, really want to try and really want to do, and I'm enjoying the process. And, like, you know, hopefully everyone's like, I love these sweatshirts. We're going to buy it. Keep doing it. And I'm like, okay, great. But if it doesn't work, I'm like, oh, I tried something I really liked and I think it's cool. So cool, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that's how we have to be able to live our lives if we can.
Yeah, no, for sure. And you're doing this all while about to take the bar next week.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for the listeners that don't know, Imani's taking the bar next week.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate you taking the time to do that. But like do this podcast, especially with that next week. What are you most excited about to become an attorney?
Ooh, good question. So I just like got used to saying lawyer because someone introduced me and was like, a lawyer. And I was like,
aw,
look at. So my journey in the law is definitely like, I'm baby stepping it. I don't want to be an adult yet. So definitely taking my time.
I understand.
I'm baby stepping it. So when I pass the bar here in Texas, mm-hmm. I'll also be able to practice in New York and like a lot of the East Coast states because they have reciprocity.
Cool.
I still need to take the bar in California mm-hmm. because there's no reciprocity in California. Mm-hmm. And so like I need to take another bar. And then I plan on like being a public defender or district attorney. I don't know what side I want to be on yet, mm-hmm. but doing that for 2 years because I'm not the type of person that's like, I'm just going to go learn on the job. I would like to be trained. I'm like very much a perfectionist. Like, teach me. I don't want to just like stumble around and figure it out. Mm-hmm. And then long term, I want to do family and criminal law mm-hmm. and like estate planning for athletes and entertainers. Be like something went wrong and they call me, like, you know, like an Olivia Pope-ish.
I love that.
You know?
You can do it.
That's my goal. And like most of my family and friends are obviously athletes and entertainers.
Right.
So.
Right.
But yeah, like I think for me, first and foremost, being an attorney is a lot just being like, I'm from Inglewood, California. I got kicked out of high school. And here I did it. So if I can do it, like so many more of you guys can do it. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And just like representation. Like when I was in law school, I had one class in 3 years that there was like more than 3 Black people in it, mm-hmm. men and women. Like it's just not a profession for people of color. Mm-hmm. Specifically Black men and women. So like my whole thing in life is like my purpose is to create safe spaces mm-hmm. and like the two things that I think I'm so touched by now is law, but before that was mental health,
right?
And when we go to finally seek mental health resources, it's a 98% chance we see someone that is not any sort of color. Mm-hmm. 98% chance. Mm-hmm. The 2% is literally every other person, right? And so like that means most of the time we go there, we're going to feel uncomfortable or maybe right. not feel heard, or maybe they won't understand what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. And then on the flip side, when we go to law, there's a higher percentage, 5% Black men and women that are lawyers, but it's still an over 90% chance I get somebody that doesn't understand my experience or maybe doesn't come from where I come from. Mm-hmm. And like, these are the two things you need yeah. to live a full life as an American. You need yeah. access to legal resources
yeah.
and like the full protection of the law that we all know that we don't often see. Mm-hmm. And then on the flip side of that, we need access to mental health resources and places where we can feel safe. And so like to me, my goal is to like just keep pushing the boundaries on that so that not only do we know that we're welcome in those spaces, mm-hmm. but that we deserve access to those spaces in healthy and safe ways.
No, I mean, everything that you just said, like that advocate in you just was shining so brightly. But no, I mean, access is more important than anything for whether it's for mental health, whether it's for legal resources, whether it's groceries. And that's why I do admire your journey so much. And I do admire the platform that athletes have to be able to provide that for their community. So you're going to take the bar in California after this, but then you also signed a new contract recently, right? For yes, basketball.
To go overseas, yeah.
Yes. So can you describe like traveling the world and playing basketball?
It's literally the coolest thing ever.
It's so cool.
It truly is. Like, yeah. Like people always complain about like having to go overseas. And like, it is harder now that I'm older. Mm-hmm. Cause like this past season, I was in China. It was my first time doing a full season overseas. So mm-hmm. I was October to March. Mm-hmm. We did get like a break in there, but like, it was so much harder. That was my first time overseas in like 5 years.
Wow.
And I'm pushing 30. And now, like, I think my priorities are a little different. Like, okay. Now, like, I have nieces, I have little brothers, mm-hmm. and like, I miss those moments with them mm. as opposed to when I was like in my 24, 25, I was like, man, I'm not even getting the phone. Like, I'm out. Like, so I do think like it is harder now that I'm older and like, you know, I value family time and like building relationships a little bit more than I did when I was younger.
Right.
But it's also so amazing to experience different cultures, like, truly experience them, right? Like, I'm literally living in these cultures. Is like I'm really cold with chopsticks when I'm in China. Like I'm locked in. Like
I love that.
I'm really good, you know. So that stuff is really cool. Like learning like a smidgen of different languages because I can like speak basketball in a couple languages, but not like anything resourceful.
Wait, that's really cool though. So what languages have you kind of picked up since?
So when I was in Israel, I could speak a little Hebrew.
Okay.
In China, I can speak basketball. Like, I can count. I can say like screen and shoot and box out and stuff. Like, that's awesome. I can say those type of things. And so I'm excited for that part. I'm going to Saudi Arabia August 10th, and I'll be there for like a month and a half to 3 months. Wow. Super excited because I've actually never been in that side, like for real. Like, the closest I've been is like Israel and Lebanon. So very excited to see that side of the world. I think it's just really cool. Like, and I think as Americans, we kind of have like this kind of arrogance that we grow up with of like, we're the best and like, this is how we live and everyone should care. And like, just living in different cultures, you just see like, one, how much people don't really care about America.
Yeah.
And then like, just how other people do it. And I think it's just like, it broadens your horizon. And I think it also makes you more empathetic to other people that like, don't come from where you come from. Because right. you see like, that just other people's choices and customs and the way they live.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, I'm really excited for you. Like, you have so many different things going for you. And one of the things that I try to promote is like, small wins too.
Yeah.
To do the day by day. And you have a lot of big wins. So it's something to note. But what would you say in like the last week or so, maybe even just today alone, are some of your small wins that kind of just made you smile?
So I think small wins are really good, especially for someone that's like super goal-oriented like me. Mm-hmm. Like I have a prayer journal.
Oh, I love that.
I started it almost 10 years ago now, actually. So I have like a lot of them. And like the way I write is like, I'll write the first day and I'll go all the way through the book and then I'll go on the back. So like when I start writing it, I'll see a poem or a prayer from like 3-4 months ago. Mm-hmm. And I can kind of see, what was I worried about? Like, what was I asking for? Da, da, da. And one of my prayers I just came across recently, it's funny you asked that. And I was just like, hey, like I've been praying about end goals. Maybe I need to pray about process. Mm-hmm. Like maybe I need to pray about like today and tomorrow and not worry so much about like what happens in 3 or 4 months. Like maybe that is my lesson right now, is that I need to focus on like the present. And I'm really bad at keeping my feet under me. I'm terrible at it. So like small wins is literally how I keep myself present. Uh-huh. Because like little joys. And yeah. So I think my most recent little joy would be yesterday I had tutoring. Mm-hmm. And we were going over like the essays I had turned in that week. Mm-hmm. And she was just like, no, like we're passing right now. She's like, all your essays have been passing. And like, now we're just trying to get more points. She was like, we've come a long way. And I was just like,
wow. Like, that's a good tutor too, to be able to like help you acknowledge that.
Yeah. Like yeah. I was just like, okay, great. Cause like, yes. And then this morning at training, I was talking to everything we talked about in this interview has been so like on point. Like, oh my God, it's crazy.
I knew.
You're amazing. And so this morning at training, we were doing this drill where it's literally so simple. It's like you pop out to the corner, you 2-dribble jump shot. And when I first started working with him, when I came back from overseas, which is like March or so. Uh-huh. Also, the summer, the year is flying by.
Oh, the summer is just, I haven't gone to the beach yet in LA.
Literally flying by. And yeah. So I was like, do you remember when I came here, this drill was so hard for me.
Aww.
And now I'm like 3 and out, like next.
Yes.
He was like, yeah, no, like when you came, this is a struggle for you. And so like, that was like my little victory of like, oh my God. Like, and again, going back to like seeing the progress that like when you put in the work.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that. I'm really happy for you. And it seems like even though the summer went by fast, it's still like this whole like new chapter is really just an extended summer for you of just new rebirth and like experiences.
Yeah. I'm so excited to take the bar just because like August 1st, I will read for fun again.
Oh, I get that.
All of my emotional support books are just, they're just piling up. Like,
what's one of your like favorite books before you started studying for the bar that you read?
Ooh. I love this question. Okay. It's by Lamarad Owens. Mm-hmm. He is a Buddhist priest. I think that's how you call it. I'm not sure. Sorry if I'm wrong.
Monk?
Yeah, something in there. Mm-hmm. But he grew up in like Black Baptist environments. So like the way he talks about it is very like relatable. I hate meditating. I've gotten better as the years have gone by. But meditation has always been so hard for me.
Yeah.
And he has a book and it's basically about anger.
Okay.
And I want to say it's like called like like finding love through rage or something in that regard. Mm-hmm. I'm so annoyed that I can't, you never can get the titles
okay.
when you have to talk about them, right? But the book was the first book that I saw talk about anger in a good way.
Mm.
Because I think oftentimes when we think about anger, we think about it as this like shameful thing or like right. this bad thing.
Uh-huh.
And he's talking about how like in order to fully feel and experience love, you have to work through your anger
mm-hmm.
and allow your anger to exist.
Mm.
And instead of thinking about something you should shun or like push away, you have to like fully experience it. And like for a kid that grew up with a lot of rage, this is a very good book to read.
Aww.
And he also talks about ways to meditate and like in like full, like lay out the steps too.
Yeah.
So like understand how to do it and like use it in a positive way. And so like that book was an amazing book I read probably to like start the year in last year
mm-hmm.
and just chef's kiss.
When you talk about mental health access, one, books is very important, but then it's also like the practical step by step, because I think a lot of people go and say, well, go meditate. And no one knows what that means. Because meditation looks different for everyone. Yeah. And some people are like, well, I can't get my mind to be blank. Well, sometimes meditating isn't about that. It's just like providing clarity. I struggle with meditation too. I've gotten better as well. But I think it's one of those things that's it's also its own craft where I'll check in a couple months and see how it's going for you.
I've been getting to like I can start my day and end my day with one. Shout out Insight Timer.
Wait, that's huge.
Shout out Insight Timer.
Okay.
But I can't like 30 minutes is crazy. Like
no, I don't know. I don't know who has time. No, I shouldn't.
I'm
say
getting
that.
A 3 to 5 minute.
Yeah, no, that's
on
great.
A good day. I might get like the 11 minute ones, but being able to like, I remember when sitting still was like the most terrifying thing to me ever. Mm. So, like, come a long way. Come a long way.
Well, your journey is super inspiring. It is so aligned with the Sparkle mission. And I really appreciate you being on. Is there anything else that you wanted to share with our listeners?
No, thank you so much for having me. And I'm just like so proud of everything you're doing. And you're just very amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Sparkle on, everyone.